And welcome everybody on YouTube as we continue the conversation on Off the Hook. I appear to have made it. Kyle, I think you made it as well.
Yep.
Let's see if we have a less catastrophic beginning to things. Gila, are you there?
I am here.
And Rob, I can see half of your head.
I also am here.
Okay. And Alex, I believe that's you on the other side.
It is
okay, this is much better. things are working now. Anyone have any remaining comments? Because I had to cut people off because our hour went by so quickly. I have a couple other stories I'd like to get to. And, Alex, you seem to be reading something important, so...
I think we should move on from the abortion issue. It's, yeah...
Well, that's up to our callers, I guess. You know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I wanted to talk about this story that a bunch of people sent us from a publication called Techno. How do you pronounce this? Techno. Kyle, can you pronounce this word?
Technologizer.
Okay, now that makes sense. The End of Computer Magazines in America. Are we going to pick up the damn phone or are we just going to let it ring all night? Put somebody on hold. If somebody's going to call us before we give the phone number out, they're going to wait on hold. So that's what we're going to do. This publication, online publication, I believe. Yeah, it has to be because they're talking about the end of printed magazines. I doubt they're a printed magazine. I'm going to read the opening paragraph. The April issues of Maximum PC and Mac Life are currently on sale at a newsstand near you, assuming there is a newsstand near you. They're the last print issues of these two venerable computer magazines, both of which date to 1996 and were originally known respectively as Boot and Mac Addict. Starting with their next editions, both publications will be available in digital form only. The article goes on to basically say that there are no more printed computer magazines. And, it struck me because there's a picture of a newsstand filled with computer magazines, and we're there, too. 2600 is right there. They address that. They say it's possible to quibble with this assertion. 2600, the Hacker Quarterly, has been around since 1984 and can accurately be described as a computer magazine, but the digest-sized publication has the production values of a fanzine, and the content bears little resemblance to the slick, consumer-y computer mags of the past. We don't take that as an insult, right? We're not offended by that.
I love a fanzine.
Yeah, because we are a zine, and we're not. We certainly don't want to be the slick, consumer-y computer mag that of the past. We're not like that. We never were.
And I think we'll keep our production values to ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. But
we value our production
very
much.
I don't know. Just the tone. I don't know why I'm reading a tone into this, but the publication has production values of a fanzine. It sort of feels like that's a put down.
It does. It's like you're being talked down to a little.
Well, I mean, what's a fanzine as opposed to a zine? What's the difference? I think I'm taking offense at fanzine more than anything else.
More than zine.
Yeah. A zine is like respectable.
That's, and wide-ranging.
Absolutely.
Everything.
But
from
a fanzine,
like,
that sounds cheap, you know? Rob?
And contrived.
I think fanzine is a good thing because in the world of like sci-fi fandom and things like that, for generations, the fanzines have been the things put together by the readers, put together by the enthusiasts, and not by some big company that's getting rich off of it. I like being a fanzine.
And our readers do put it together. Our readers are our writers as well. So, fine. It just feels kind of weird to call it a fanzine. I just figured that was like something for, you know, rock bands or stars of one sort or another. Yes, Alex?
I mean, I think it's a silly way to describe the magazine. I don't think that we're a fanzine by any means. I mean, I don't think it fits. I think it's used in a derogatory manner, but in a way that's illogical and doesn't make any sense. I think that, you know, they're obviously talking about, you know, the production value or the manner in which the magazine is put together, which, you know, they have no idea. They have no idea about, you know, the, I think the history of the magazine, why it looks the way it does. And I think maybe that there was, and there's no shame in this whatsoever, being what would be known as a zine. I think a fanzine just, frankly, doesn't make any sense. But 2600 being a zine, back in the day, that was the type of thing that, you know, would be put out in some kind of underground manner, right?
Right.
You know, a zine about communism or workers' rights or something like that, right? Something where, you know, if you worked in an office, you created a zine and you went in after hours when nobody was there at 2 o'clock in the morning and you used a photocopier to mass produce your zine and then get it out to people, you know, in some underground manner. And I think you did do that, didn't
That's
you?
Almost exactly what we did, yes.
Exactly, right? You know, back in 1984 when the magazine started, it was a zine and still had, and it had the look of the zine. And I think that's an aesthetic that has persisted throughout the magazine deliberately.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a fanzine. It's not a zine. It's an aesthetic.
Well, I don't know. I think we're a zine. I'm just not sure we're a fanzine. But
that's right. I think
well,
that's
fan
right.
of what then? Yeah, the fan. What is the fandom? I think Rob kind of said like, okay, this works in certain subcultures and so forth and genres of literature or subgenres where people have an affinity for a certain type or a certain story or look to a story. But I don't know. It doesn't give us the breadth. It sort of narrows the scope.
So, yeah, I do think you can critique the production without knowing the history of the production. I don't think someone has to know the whole history in order to have the right to say something to judge us. Go ahead, Rob.
I'm looking at the photo in this article on technologizer.com, and they put a photo up of the magazine rack at Barnes & Noble. And 2600 is there. Right next to it is a Raspberry Pi thing and Make magazine. But there's also right next to 2600 is this big, slick-looking, like corporate-looking thing, and it's labeled in huge letters, Hacker's Manual.
Yeah, what was that? Where did that come
and,
from?
Yeah, I don't know what this is. I've never heard of Hacker's Manual magazine, but it's next to PC Gamer, and it's just very entertaining.
It could be something that starts with another word that you're only seeing half of.
Maybe. Yeah. But another story from our recent absence, we were at a big grocery store in the Midwest, and this grocery store is huge, and it actually still had a magazine rack, which is not something you see often anymore. And in this magazine rack, 2600 was there.
Wait, we're in a supermarket? I thought we got out of the supermarkets.
No, it was a supermarket, but it was the previous issue. It's not the current issue.
Okay.
Maybe they're sold out of the new issue.
Maybe.
That's weird. Okay, you'll have to tell me later what supermarket it was. Now, you know what? Tell everybody what supermarket it was so people can find it.
2600 magazine is available in the magazines section of the Woodman's West store in Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, it's Madison, Wisconsin. Okay, well, anything goes there. You know, you can sell 2600 in a laundromat there, and it'll be popular. It's a college town, so yeah, of course they break the rules.
I have a bit of an update though.
Okay. That's disturbing. That update. What just burned down?
Just wanted to give you a taste of what was outside my window.
Alex, you know, out of courtesy, mute your damn fire engine while Gila has an update. Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you. Fine. The Hacker's Manual appears to be a special edition put out by Linux Format Magazine.
Okay.
And they put one out manually. So, there you go.
What do you mean they put it out manually? How do you not put it out manually?
Okay. They put out an annual manual.
Yes, it's an annual manual, Emmanuel.
Okay, you know what? Let's just end that right there.
But I think some of the aesthetic and the choices lend to the staying power.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're not a slick ad-taking magazine.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. We don't have ads, so therefore we don't depend on ads. And because we don't depend on ads, when people stop buying ads, we're fine, because as long as people keep buying the magazine for what the magazine is, a magazine without ads, we'll be all right. And you know, we're facing some crap right now with Amazon, with them deciding to stop distributing magazines. We're trying to sort things out where we can have a presence there, but also control most of it ourselves and have our readers control most of it. And for digital publications, we're talking about digital publications now being under threat. You know, everyone was basically, oh, okay, you know, dead paper, that's, or dead trees, that's ending. but there'll always be a home in the digital world. Well, not really. First, Google decided that printed magazines weren't real magazines, and they would decide what constituted a magazine that they would carry, and that basically screwed over all the small publishers. Now Kindle's doing something very similar, and there are many other stories like that.
There's only a few gatekeepers.
Yeah, it's a mentality that basically punishes the underdog. And, you know, back in the 90s when there were zines on Borders bookshelves everywhere, and these are, you know, the chains that took over for the independent stores, put them out of business, and then the chains went out of business. So the whole thing has been very, very frustrating. But this kind of article is both frustrating and also kind of inspiring as well because, you know, we're the only survivors, apparently, and it's a little scary. It's like driving around in a phone company truck that we've repainted ourselves to look like old school telephones, a telephone company, playing with dial telephones and pay phones, and realizing we're the ones that have all of this now because the phone companies lost interest. They lost interest in pay phones. They lost interest in basically most of the things that the phone company was known for, you know, the whole network, the in-band signaling network, and rotary phones, and just all of this history that now, for some reason, people in the hacker community have more control over than anyone affiliated with a phone company, because we valued it. We saw it as something that was, you know, unique and worth preserving. And since they don't care about it, we're the ones preserving it. And that's fine. That's fine. I'd rather it be us than nobody. Yes, Gila.
I did just have a thought that kind of ties back into the previous conversation and also some of the other stuff we were kind of dancing around but not really talking about. I think that there is a very real – there's reality to the idea that it's hard to be what you can't see. And the fact that the world keeps trying to hide things in the hopes that if people can't see it, they won't want to be it. And I think that's relevant because if the whole idea of the corporate technological world is keep looking for the new shiny thing, and part of the hacker mentality is about repurposing and reusing and making the best and the most of what you actually have, they want people not to see that so they can't be that. And I think that's a huge part of it, and I'm sorry, I'm still kind of stuck on Florida, but it's important to be able to see it so you can be it, and I think that's a really important, you know, the scrappy spirit of 2600 Magazine could inspire anyone to do it themselves.
That's what I
on
hope.
A smaller scale.
I don't care about the scale. I just want that particular spirit to be there. And if we can inspire that, there's nothing more we can ask for than to inspire people to do things like this. And it's doable. It's doable. If you believe in yourself and if you're persistent and somewhat annoying, you can do all kinds of things. There was a comment actually for this article about the death of paper computer magazines. From somebody named Cy, who says, I do indeed, quote unquote, quibble with this assertion in response to the article. In its obviously absolutist form, the article title promotes. The article title, again, is The End of Computer Magazines in America. 2600 has a dedicated, if specialized audience, releases periodically in each quarter, still in print, has no current plans to stop Dead Tree production, and it's paid for by subscriptions. This is the definition of magazine. Just because you personally dismiss it because of vague, hand-wavy, arbitrary narrowing of your definition of a computer magazine doesn't make it less so. Thank you so much, Sy, spelled S-Y-E, for getting us. It really matters, and that's just awesome to see.
Rightly rebutted, this article is. It's true. It's true. There's a broad definition of all of that. And when you talk about these consolidation issues, that narrows the variety and volume of alternative and independent sources, even flyers at the door for local events or posters and stuff. you lose that when you lose the independent bookstores and centers of knowledge and community. And then when large corporations are making sort of broad policies, oh, we can't have a community bulletin board here in the store, you know, we have to homogenize everything, and now we're going away because we can't afford to exist and so forth. It's really, really predatory. And in a thing like information, I agree, like, that, like, this isn't truly the end. I think the publishing world is transforming and taking on, and specifically computer and special interest magazines maybe are becoming a different thing than they were as far as being broadly available, for selling hardware and so forth. But the appetite for information or physical like periodic magazine subscriptions or just a way to convey information without the electronic form, people find novelty in that, and I think it's fluctuating and it's changing forms, and we're sort of adding a lot of the and embracing a lot of the digital aspects, but going away forever entirely, yeah, it won't be what it was. I feel like that comment really nails it. It's that it's taking on a different form, but these things are still here.
Yes, definitely. I wonder too, you know, how one of the complaints of being in the big bookstores was that our magazine, since it's smaller than others, was always getting buried, you know, and put in back of those other magazines and hidden on the shelves. Well, now that there's nobody else on the shelves, do you think it can just be all 2600 now, or we'll just have a lot more visibility? I mean, it's hard to throw out bookshelves, so I'd like to think that you'll see more of us.
Like a whole row.
Why not? Well, we've done that before. many times we have gone into bookstores and rearranged their shelving to make us stand out a little bit more, because they certainly weren't doing it. And a lot of our readers have done the same thing. We thank them for that. Shall we go to our call, who's been on hold now for a long time? That's what happens when you call the number before we give it out. And I'm giving out the number now, 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK.
Yeah, I was going to say, give that number out once more.
Uh-huh.
But I think that it only helps the call, because it sort of... it allows it to ferment a little bit, and it gets a little bit of, like, extra flavor, you know?
Uh-huh.
It'll be a better call.
Tell yourself that.
Hello, Emmanuel?
You know, it's customary to wait for a greeting. So can we do this
again?
Can we do this again? Let's come in again, all right? So hold on. It's rebel, you know, it's rebel. All right. So I get ready. And we have our first caller. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Yes, Emmanuel.
Rebel. It's Rebel, everybody. How are you?
Yeah. Yes.
All right, that's enough of that.
Of course.
What's going on today?
Calling from the hackerspace, and we have...
You never left, did you? You've been there the whole week.
Yeah, the whole week. And we have Rick here, who's also...
You've what now?
Did you hear Rick?
Did
he's
I hear...
also, he was at the 2600 meeting.
No. You're confusing me.
He was at the meeting, but he's working on something now.
Okay,
but,
well, that's what happens.
I just want to...
Did you get your bike back? Did you get your damn bike?
Yes, I did.
You did?
Yes.
Wow.
Prayer
does work. I just want everybody to know that. You just have to devote a couple hours to it every day, and what you wish for will come true.
Right, but it wasn't what you suggested. It was the fact that my other friend who, you know, that I know, he gave me the person's phone number, but the person who took the bike, he didn't pay his bill, and his phone was off or something, or he said he lost his phone. But eventually he found it and texted me on WhatsApp and told me the bike is safe, and I got it.
Wait.
And his phone, I was...
Wait, you're confusing me here. So you had the phone number last week. So you're
right.
Saying that the guy didn't pay his bill and the phone got disconnected, so it was kind of useless to even have the phone number. So who gave you your bike back?
He did.
Who?
I had the phone number, but he...
Your friend or the guy
who
took
it? The bike.
Okay.
The guy who took it. He said he paid his bill, and he finally texted me and said, you know, I have your bike and, you know, I want to toll fee.
Well, it wasn't a question of him not paying his phone bill. It's a question of him riding away with your bike and not coming back. What does that have to do with his phone bill?
I wasn't able to contact him. That's the problem.
Well, yeah, but you weren't able to contact him the further away he got from you. That was the issue. Did he explain why he stole your bike in the first place?
Well, he said that it got stolen from him, but he was able to manage to get it back.
It got stolen from him. How does that?
Right.
How do you even lie so badly? Let me see if I have this right. You lent him the bike. You saw him ride away. He did not come back. Is he claiming that as soon as he got out of eyesight, somebody jumped him and took the bike, and he's been working ever since to get back?
He said he left it somewhere and somebody stole it, and
But why didn't he give it back when he? Why didn't he just return it?
Well, because he ran out of power and the person abandoned it and he found it, and that's when he called me.
No, that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking why he didn't return it to you when you lent it to him.
I don't know.
I would think you'd be interested in that. That would be the first question you would ask him.
Well, the thing is that I was trying to find out what phone company his cell phone was, and I wasn't able to, but he said it was Chris
Wireless.
You seem
more interested in that than the actual facts about this.
I want to know, did he ride off to go pay his phone bill and just, like...
This isn't about a phone bill. This is about stealing a bike. Am I the only one who gets that?
I do. I get it.
You know, Rebel, you give us something like this. You give us this dramatic series of events. We're going to want some answers. We're going to want to know why certain things unfolded the way they did. We don't care about his phone bill.
Well, I didn't either, but, I was trying to contact him, but I couldn't. I was trying to find out where he lives and everything.
Right, but eventually he contacted you or somebody contacted him, and he gave back the stolen bike, but never explained why he stole it.
Right.
Yeah, it just seems like that's a big gaping hole in this whole series of events.
I don't know. But anyway, I was trying to find a Cricket Wireless. I could have find out his address by then, but anyway.
What have you learned from this, Rebel? What will you not do again?
No, I put a tracker, a tile on the bike, and I registered it with the precinct, so that they have the serial number, and
and the police know where you are at all times. It's win-win.
Right. And when I went to T-Mobile, I entered his phone number. They didn't have it. They said they didn't have it. I went to Verizon. They didn't have any information on that number. I went to AT&T. They didn't have any information. So he said that his phone bill was Cricket phone company was Cricket Wireless. And then I should have gone to those two. But anyway, I'm at the hackerspace.
Yes.
Manual.
Uh-huh.
And I was, I've been playing with radio. Too bad Bernie S isn't around anymore. I've been playing with radios. Like, I got this handheld CB transceiver, 40-channel CB, that could transmit and receive. It's just 5 watts. It's like a little rubber antenna. I'm in the city here, and, I can hear other, channels, people in other channels, but, of course, they can't hear me because they're too far away. They may be, they have telestandard more powerful radios, like 10 watt or 20 watt radios. But today I went up to the Hudson Yards building, which is all the way up, the one on 30th Street, the big building that they built with that ledge outside that you can go on the 100th floor and go out on the ledge.
Yeah, people do that, and it makes me queasy looking at it from a distance.
I went out on the ledge outside, and I turned on the CB radio. I was talking to somebody in Bushwick or Bensonhurst or somewhere in Brooklyn.
Wow.
Talking and receiving. And, so I guess height makes a difference on
CB.
Wow, who knew?
But, of course, when I got back downstairs to the street, I was able to hear the person slightly, but he wasn't able to hear me.
Well, that's his misfortune, I guess. Maybe he can hear you now. Maybe he's listening.
Maybe he's listening, yeah. Let's see, what else? Let's see. The hacker space. Make a suit.
How many people are there now at the hacker space?
Oh, I don't know. About 10?
Wow, that's not bad for Wednesday night.
Yeah. Is this place open 24 hours?
to follow them. What I'm doing right now is perfect.
Let me ask. Let's see. I don't know about this. My second time here, so they're talking about other people.
Strange. It's kind of like he only goes during our show.
Mm-hmm. Is this place open 24 hours? Is it? Oh, really? Okay. So if you're a member, you could come at any time. Oh, okay.
You're still not a member, Rebel?
I should become a member.
You better become a member. You can't just take advantage of people like this.
Right.
These people gave you shelter. They listened to
right,
you.
Right, that's true.
So you owe them. All right, well, Rebel, it was good hearing the happy ending to that story. I just wish there were more details and answers, but whatever.
Yeah, so how does the tile work? Bluetooth works only 30 or 40 feet, but this tile thing, it says it works 200 feet if there's a Bluetooth in range. How does that work?
Anybody want to take this? Nobody wants to take this. I'm sorry, I don't think anybody knows. How it's called a tile.
Yeah, it's called a tile. It's a Bluetooth thing.
I think you should do some research and tell us.
That's true. Maybe I will.
Yeah.
And
play
in
with
June,
it.
I'll be at the 2600 meeting in June, in May. But in June, I'm going to Russia to St. Petersburg.
Oh my goodness!
Last year I went to Moscow. Last year I went to Moscow. Now I'm going to go to St. Petersburg.
Uh huh. Okay. Well, St. Petersburg is a really nice looking city.
That's what I hear. That's what I want to go.
Not that Moscow isn't, but St. Petersburg looks much nicer.
No, Moscow. I loved Moscow. I didn't love Moscow.
I love Moscow more than you do, but. It's as far as attractive cities go, I think St. Petersburg wins that contest.
Right. You've been to St. Petersburg, too, haven't you?
I have. I took the train between the two cities.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I'd do it again.
What else?
I would.
You?
Maybe in the future, though.
Right. All right. So I guess that's all for this week.
Okay. Well, it went awfully fast.
Anybody else want to talk to Off the Hook?
You know, don't make it like we're begging or anything like that. These people are busy. They're doing their own projects, and as they should.
Hey, people have raspberry pies and things like that.
All right.
Yes, we'll leave them to the microcontrollers.
All right, then I'll talk to you next week.
All right. We will look forward to that.
All right.
Good night.
Thanks for the call.
All right.
Bye-bye. Of course, we're not on next week, but I'm sure he'll call anyway. He doesn't listen to the show. He doesn't listen to our show, but just calls every week at this time and updates us on various things. But that's an exciting end to the saga of the stolen electronic bike, which I just wish I knew why the guy stole it, other than him being a jerk.
Yeah, I'm very happy for Rebel, and I was concerned about that. Good for him.
802-321-4225. Is anyone else out there has something to share with us, or comments, or critiques, or... information. There is a phone call coming in.
Yeah, things that got hacked. We didn't get any updates on the clout gate, I guess, or whatever we're calling it, Pentagon leak.
Oh, we got to talk about that. We didn't mention that at all. We talked about it last show. The leaker was caught, and in fact, Kyle, you won because we predicted when was it going to get caught. I said a week. You said. Alex said months, so Alex, you were way off on this one. But Kyle said last Friday, and he actually was caught before then. So.
Yeah, Thursday. He was in jail Friday.
Uh-huh. Yes, Alex.
But I did say if he is caught, it was going to be something stupid. It was going to be something idiotic, right, and silly. And
what tipped you off on that? The whole the Minecraft chat rooms and other.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, let's take this phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Good evening. I'm one of the people that did send you the email about the article from Technologizer.
Oh, cool.
That was very interesting.
Yes, thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah, brought back a lot of memories. Do you remember a store called Nico Smoke Shop that used to be on, 11th Street and 6th Avenue? They had a great magazine collection in that place.
I don't remember that specifically, but it sounds like something from the 90s, definitely. A smoke shop with a magazine section.
Oh, yeah. They had 2600. They had Gray Areas, Fringewear Review, Fact Sheet 5. It was an amazing place.
Yeah.
And even Penn Station, they used to have a gigantic computer magazine select section. I mean, they're all gone now, I think. I think basically it's just Barnes & Noble. But there were a lot of great magazine stores back in the 80s and 90s. Hudson Square.
Hudson News. I think Hudson News might have been in
Hudson
Penn Station.
Hudson News, right, yeah. Right. Yeah, well, they had a huge, spot. I remember Boardwatch Magazine, BBS Caller's Digest, Internet Underground, Internet World. And there was a great newspaper store, too, Hodelings on 42nd between 5th and 6th. And you could pick up Seattle Times, Chicago Tribune. I mean, it would be a day or two after the cover date. But it was still, I think something's lost when everything is online and you can't get anything in print.
Yeah, a lot is lost, especially history, because you can change a story. You know, you can say, oh, we didn't say that, we said this. You know, whereas if it's printed, it's there. You did it. It's you made the story. If you made a mistake, you print the retraction the day after, but you don't just obliterate the mistake. That's what bothers me about purely electronic publications.
And just the serendipity factor. I mean, just being able to thumb through a magazine or a newspaper and you're looking for one thing and you find something else. I mean, it happens online, but it's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's qualitatively different.
Plus,
but
the whole access thing. What if you don't have access to technology? There's many people still who don't have that kind of access, or who might not want that kind of access, who are perfectly happy reading a book or a magazine or just something that they can hold in their hands that doesn't require power.
That's true. Yeah. I was curious, when Rebel was calling just before, a few minutes ago, was he calling from that place Hack Manhattan on West 37th Street?
I'm not sure exactly where he was. Was it a Fab Lab or something was the name of the place, I think?
Yes.
Was it Fat Cat Fab Lab?
Yeah, I think that was it.
It was one of those, yes. And the
that's what he said last week.
The number wasn't any different than anything we haven't seen before. It wasn't specifically for a Fab Lab. It was the usual Rebel.
I have no idea what you just said. I have no idea what that means. What do you mean? What was the usual Rebel?
He wasn't calling from that. Like I can.
Oh,
see
you're looking
the
at the caller ID. I did not. You're referring to caller ID. Okay, I thought that's what he was saying. Yeah, so
no,
that's...
I was just curious. I'd like to check out the place where he was calling from. I'd like to go over there, but it was called Fab Lab or something?
Rob, you seem to know the name of it.
One of the hacker spaces here in New York is called Fat Cat Fab Lab.
Yeah, so type those words in.
Fat Cat
Fab Lab. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yes. That's what he said last week, so I'm pretty sure that's where he is.
I was just curious. I know you didn't get a chance to talk about it because there's so many big news stories, but... were you guys encouraged or discouraged by the settlement between Dominion and Fox News? I was a bit disappointed because the money is good for Dominion, but no on-air apology from Fox, which I think all of us would have benefited from if we had to see them.
I don't blame them for taking apology. I don't blame them for taking the settlement because it does definitely help them, but we're all cheated because we deserve to see Fox brought to their knees for what they did, what they continue to do, and they will continue to do it now because there's really no ramifications for the actual liars. Yeah, Rupert Murdoch has the money. He can write a check. Probably has it on him. You know, you get $750 million is a lot, but they can weather that storm. No consequences. And so I think, we're all losing as a result. Kyle?
Well, I'm optimistic because I read there are other defamation and lawsuits that Dominion has against specific individuals, and I'm hopeful that this money will be put towards those going to trial. That might be a bit more personal, shall we say, than like trying to indict a whole media organization, or in other words, have all of their personalities come forth, and it'll seem a lot more like a hit on this organization when the organization has a lot of good people itself, but there were pundits and personalities making a lot of money, perpetuating stuff and basically tarnishing the reputation of that organization, they themselves may ultimately be held accountable in subsequent suits. So I don't know, but I'm not putting too much hope in that either. I think the confronting it the way they did, Dominion that is, only bolstered their reputation and lent credibility to the false nature of what was being said. But I don't know if that's much solace for anybody. That's just how I'm thinking.
Not for me, not really. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I'm really saddened by the settlement because I feel like society as a whole was robbed of everything that would have been entered into evidence, all the testimony, everything that would have been entered into public record about how this sort of thing goes on at Fox behind the scenes. You know, the chance to put all that out in the open is what's just been sold for $750 million. And yeah, I'm not thrilled with it.
But it's not the end. There's another suit pending.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
it's going to happen there. That's what Kyle was saying, that maybe they'll go after the actual people that spread the lies as well. Let's hope so. Let's hope that people pay for their crimes for basically leading people astray intentionally.
Yeah, I hear you, and I think that is so true. Like, Discovery, I think Alex would be, like, right there agreeing that, you know, you get to get a lot of detail. The granularity changes when you go to trial and so forth. So that would have been fantastic. But I think that it's their choice to make. And I don't think Dominion's just, I mean, whatever the terms were too, I don't know what other things they might have to relinquish or cooperate with necessarily. But if there are other things that will be presented or accusations made, I imagine Dominion would bring that same energy to those, and that they're not just going to come kind of lackluster, like, oh, gee, well, you know, we settled there. Any others we can just, you know, kind of make go away. Like, I think they still have some points to make in the public sphere about what this did to their reputation and the wider society.
I just want to see. Well, go ahead, Alex.
Well, I was about to say, you know, we may get that wish because Fox, as I understand it, is still facing other defamation suits. And as much as we would have enjoyed seeing them squirm and scream as this proceeded to trial, it's a hell of a lot of money to settle this thing. And it's, you know, I think that they realized that this was an existential threat to them, and they had to settle at any cost.
But that's the thing, though. When they settle, it's kind of business as usual. Like, you know, Alex Jones was found to have been liable for almost $1 billion in the lawsuit against him. Yet he still is very rich, still lives in a nice place, still is spreading his crap. He's not suffering.
He didn't settle, though.
No, he didn't settle. He was basically found liable.
Yeah.
He should be suffering, and he's not suffering. Meanwhile, okay, I saw this story yesterday. This guy named Gary Bowser, he was sentenced in 2021 to 40 months in prison and a $14.5 million fine for what? His role in a Nintendo hacking group called Team Executor. He was just released from jail, but he was indicted back in 2020. He was initially charged with 11 felonies and was sentenced to first a $4.5 million fine, then a $10 million additional fine, as well as up to 40 months in prison. He says that of the $14.5 million he owes, he is only be able to pay off $175 in $25 monthly installments. But basically, they're going to be going after him for the rest of his life. He said his agreement with Nintendo allows for about 30% of his whatever salary he makes to be immediately given to them. Now, you know, Nintendo is a multi-billion-dollar company. I don't think, obviously, he committed a crime. There's no question about that. But have they suffered irreparable harm? I wouldn't say it's irreparable. They certainly suffered some harm by having people rip them off, but they're going to be okay. But this guy, for the rest of his life, is going to be suffering. He's being made an example of. Why doesn't the same thing happen to people like Alex Jones? Because he's not suffering. He's basically living the life and boasting and just being the usual jerk that he always has been. But smaller people, you know, who piss off corporations or governments, and I'm thinking of Virgil now too, they are made to really, really suffer. And oftentimes they're not the worst of the people that are being sentenced. These guys with the money, with the connections, they just seem to get away with it all the time. And the latest Fox thing feels like they're doing it again, just writing a check. But thanks for that question.
Yeah, well, you guys do a great job, and thanks for a very stimulating show.
Thank you for calling.
Enjoy your week off.
All right. Take care now. 802-321-4225 is our telephone number. If anyone else is out there would like to share their thoughts. But, yeah, that Nintendo story was surprising because, you know, yeah, they were doing some rather nasty things. They basically were trafficking in circumvention devices. They were doing money laundering.
Like hacking for hire stuff?
It all had to do with video games.
Specifically, like the Nintendo world.
I know people take this so seriously, but I just feel subverting democracy is a worse crime, and no one ever seems to really pay the price when they do that. He served as the PR manager for this fraudulent company that was ripping off Nintendo. It's kind of funny, it really is, but I just think people should learn from their mistakes and move on. If they keep doing it, then obviously harder penalties, but it just feels like big companies making somebody suffer for being an idiot. All right, we have another phone call?
We do indeed.
All right, let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you just fine.
Hey, great. Good evening, Emmanuel. Good evening, everyone. I guess first calling from Kansas.
Kansas.
So
wow.
I just wanted to tell you guys, yeah. So a little, I always try to catch you guys. So that's what I was going to say. Unlike Rebel, I actually listen to the show on Wednesday night. So thank you for that.
Awesome.
Yeah. So despite your technical problems, I was sort of sitting listening tonight and I had a bit of a stream of consciousness. And So I just sort of wanted to pitch all this out there and let you guys, you know, give me some feedback.
Okay.
Long story short, I really just think like on your topic that evil's really been emboldened. And I feel like a lot of the things that are happening in the world today, like our worst dystopian novels have come true. And none of them actually all got it right. Between 1984, Brave New World, Handmaiden's Tale, all those things are happening. And I think the general person, the general average person, they're too busy. They're too distracted with their lives. There's just too much weight to it all. And they're basically there just in their daily lives taking their soma, trying to get through the day. And I do always appreciate Alex's very thoughtful commentary on law. The only thing that I guess I would ask about that is, you know, with all the gerrymandering and all the problems that we've had there, if Congress was asleep at the wheel or at the switch, aren't they really already compromised? I mean, when we talk about redistricting and all the things that have done to prevent democracy from working properly, that also discourages people. And so at a certain point, the weight is just so crushing, you're beset on all sides. And at this point, the strategy, it almost has to be very strategic. It has to be almost chess-like in the sense that all the wins that we sort of have to navigate our way through is the only way that we're going to recover and actually make any progress back. So thanks for letting me ramble there. So what do you think?
Yeah, that tracks. I mean,
yeah, I think it being incredibly analytical and intelligent about where you put energy and nimble, moving through this landscape of, as you said, emboldened evil and wrong.
It must be somewhat frustrating being from a place like Kansas. I mean, not to cast aspersions or anything like that. I mean, Kansas was one of the first states actually that had a very strong voice in favor of abortion rights, to the surprise of many in this country. But in the middle of America, with a fairly sparsely populated area, do you feel like your voice is heard? Do you feel like you have the opportunity to actually affect change?
Well, that's a really good question, because, again, you have to understand how to approach people. I mean, there are people that, again, when you prey on them, you use psychology against them, which is what I really think happens with so many you know, so many of those people working to sort of undermine the foundational principles of free thought, of free speech, of letting people live their lives. And I do think there are people, I mean, I would hopefully count myself as one of them, that will give the other side an opportunity. You definitely shouldn't entertain every frivolous argument or every straw man. But at the same time, if you know how to approach people, there are a lot of minds out here. And again, you, since you alluded to it, you know, in the more metropolitan areas and the bigger cities, right, that's where democracy basically sort of started the fire, right,
mm-hmm.
In terms of the abortions and women's rights. And it's possible, but again, it's just those are the things that people need to hear. They need to hear more about the victories, I think, so that way it's almost a bit of a beacon, right, that it is still possible, even though, again, that we just feel so worn down, because nothing sort of disenfranchises people more than when they feel that they're not going to affect change.
Yes.
And so I certainly could concede and feel defeated, but every day I get up and try to, you know, share a worldview, not shove it down anyone's throat, but at the same time, too, basically try to get people to ask questions. Because if you let people answer those questions themselves, if you guide them, right, it's a whole lot better than trying to attack their personal belief systems. Because I've always felt you'll never logically get someone out of an emotional place.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, it reminds me, we recently had a plumber come over because we had some unique issues that this was the best guy within 50 miles to deal with it, with the patience, with the knowledge. But boy, was this guy right wing and was not afraid to let you know and had all kinds of theories and thoughts. And, you know, my thought at the time was, do I engage this person in a debate? I mean, do I really need to get my plumber to see my political point of view? Or do I treat the guy like he has his opinion and, you know, he's welcome to it. And right now, you know, he's the most important person in my life that needs to fix a damn clogged toilet. And I realize, you know, we don't have to have this argument all the time. We can embrace people for who they are.
The proper sort of forum for it, right? There's the right time to engage people. You want to be in a very sort of, this is psychology 101 approach in a relaxed environment. You know, it's not charged. That you made, I would say, the right call there, right? When they're trying to do their business and you're trying to do, you know, your business, that's not the right forum. So again, that's where a little forethought and a little strategy, right? You have to pick, you have to sort of strategically pick those battles, and that wasn't the right time for it.
Right, and you know, if you are on good terms with somebody, they're all the more likely to have a good conversation with you in the future should you decide to keep talking to them. But otherwise, you know, it's just you don't want to turn into an annoying person yourself that is, as you said, shoving it down people's throat constantly. But at the same time, you stand firm to your beliefs. If the guy had gone, you know, had said offensive, racist things about particular people, I wouldn't have let that go, obviously. But this is just basically talking points, like the guy in the White House is just screwing everything up. You know, let somebody get away with that, no problem. I don't have to win every argument. I don't have to have the argument every damn time.
We've all been there.
Just want to flush the damn toilet is all I want to do. And I got my wish, and we're on good terms. And I feel, you know, when Kyle and I went across the country a couple of years ago, we drove all the way. We went through Kansas. In fact, we stayed in liberal Kansas. That is false advertising, let me just say right there. But we didn't have a single bad experience with anybody. And I would guess that we probably agreed politically with around 1% of the people we encountered. But it was still very pleasant because it wasn't all about that. It was just about the simple things, which are the most important things.
And I think that there's...
And a lot of...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say that a lot of people do come from a very traditional mentality here where they believe in helping other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the strange disconnect is helping other people that you see as your next door neighbor, or helping someone that you see in your town. It's not that different than helping someone you can't see far away. And that's where the strange disconnect comes in. I can't quite account for that, but understanding that people are trying to live their lives while they're trying to live their own lives.
Right.
And it's funny that so many people have the bumper stickers about don't tread on me around here, which, again, is just sort of fascinating because, again, when they're thinking of their rights versus their opinions and the rights that they're trying to impose on others, it is a logical fallacy. It doesn't add up. And that, again, those are the things that those of us that are thinking and trying to affect change in places like this, we want to draw people out and sort of show them how that, you know, 2 and 2 is not adding up to 5 in mm-hmm. those situations.
Go ahead, Kyle.
Certainly. No, the point is to have the right kind of discourse and so forth when the opportunity strikes itself. But I think that the overall tenor of working things out and so forth has maybe clouded a little bit of some of the culpability I think that is due, and that maybe we're trying to project onto some of these legal cases and so forth, because there shouldn't be any underestimating the ill will that a lot of the political strategies that were employed to prevent real progress, you know, that could have used Agreed. Debate and insight from conservatives, you know, mm-hmm. and had some compromises and some things to make it functional and you know, and within budget, whatever it is, you know, everybody has something to bring to the table. And I think the culpability is getting lost in a moment where there's some sort of high road. Let's be unified and meet global or other challenges and sort of rise above the pettiness. But there are some real political wounds that I don't know that are really going to readily heal. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're saying is a great model for at least getting to a place where you can be, as you said, you know, not in a charged environment and point things out that don't strike, that don't keep people in that emotional mode.
Well, I don't want to take up too much time. I appreciate you taking my call. I feel that politics and technology, they are bound together. There's certainly a relationship there, and those of us that do tech and we're tinkerers and we're hackers, we think about these things. And so giving it a forum, giving it a place where we can sort of, I guess, approach it in a very analytical and a very positive way is the best thing for discourse. So, again, I wish you guys all the best, and, I'll be tuning in. I always tune in, and I appreciate the show, and please, that paper magazine, that means a lot to me. So,
Thanks so much for the call, and thanks just for being out there in Kansas. It makes us feel good knowing that we have people out there who care.
Absolutely. Cheers, gentlemen.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. What a great call.
Brilliant. Yeah, keep listening, keep talking to people.
I think, you know, the true culprits are the ones who know better. And by that I mean politicians, you know, elected officials, people who are on the media and are basically spreading lies, knowing they're spreading lies, denigrating people based on who they are, where they live, what they look like. Because what that does, I think you got a visitor there, Robin Gila.
No, go on. There's no time limit.
Basically, they're not being hurt by this, but what they're doing is they're creating people like the guy who shot the poor kid in Kansas City, like the guy who killed the girl in upstate New York, like the guy in Texas who shot a cheerleader for getting into the wrong car. All these people who are filled with hatred and have guns because they feel that's necessary. It's necessary to hate. It's necessary to always be armed. It's necessary to shoot first, ask questions later. People aren't like that from birth. They become like that. You know, they get fed propaganda. They get fed hatred. They get fed fear. And all of a sudden, they have their enemies, even though they've never encountered them. They could say, oh, these people who live in the city, they just don't get it. They're all a bunch of liberals. And we can say all those people in the country are a bunch of rednecks. They don't understand anything. And we just live with that hatred and fear without ever having contact. And I think the contact is so important because that's the way you bridge these gaps. But you can't have the contact when you have all the hatred being spewed from our government and from our media. And those are the people that need to be held accountable. And that's why it is frustrating to see this Fox trial not happen. It's frustrating to see politicians getting away with lying and facing no consequences. You know, it's frustrating to see outright crimes being committed and Supreme Court justices who are cheating and all sorts of stacking the deck that keep happening over and over again without accountability and without change. So it's good to talk about it. It's good to recognize it. But always feel like you can change. You can make a difference. And that's one thing. Maybe I didn't communicate this in the first hour, but I'm very optimistic because I believe in us as people. And I think we can change this. We can upgrade our system. We can get a better OS. We can figure out how to make it all work in a fair and just way. But we have to acknowledge the problem first. We have to say that, yeah, you know what? System is definitely due for something different. Because the same way of approaching things, I don't think it's going to work anymore. I don't think it's going to keep working. We've seen how easily it can be abused, how easily it can be thwarted. And if we don't change it, that's still going to be there. It's like a hacker who finds a vulnerability and is told, don't tell anybody about this or you'll get blamed for it. And if you don't tell anybody about it, it's still going to be there. The vulnerability will still be there. And somebody will take advantage of it, and it'll probably be a more evil person who does down the road. You have to acknowledge security issues. You have to acknowledge holes in systems. You got to patch them. You got to replace them. You can't just keep pretending everything's working fine like some pig-headed sysadmin who hates everybody who complains about anything. We've all been there. Yes, Alex, it looks like you're aching to say something.
You're just this pig-headed sysadmin reference just brought me back. I had yet another Proustian moment here.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember those old, I guess they were text files from back in the day, BOFH, the Bastard Operator from Hell?
I do remember that the acronym. I don't remember the contents.
That was the epitome of the pig-headed sysadmin. They were just so great.
That's a column now.
That's what?
That's a column now on the Register. They do BOFH.
Oh, do they? Yeah. Okay.
Do they really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a regular column on the Register, I'm pretty sure.
Alex, your assignment is to get us those text files in 2 weeks so that we can read some of them.
Right. But yeah, they were originally distributed as text file stories?
Yeah, I think they were. I'm pretty sure they were. Is that right, Rob?
Yeah, I think you're right.
You could probably just call Jason Scott and get him in within the hour.
Sure, if he'll have it, yeah.
What do you want? What format? Do you want it on a UMAT, on a tape?
3-inch disk drive. The floppy disk.
8-inch? How about a 40-meg hard drive?
Do we have any more calls?
No, give the number out.
Give the number out and wait a couple of minutes. 802-321-4225. This will be the last call. So if anyone out there has something to say that has not already called, please do so. 802-321-4225 is our telephone number. Any other thoughts, folks?
I just found something interesting from the BOFH, where there's, the BOFH would always give you some kind of crazy excuse as to why he couldn't do something, or the network was down, or a computer wasn't working. And there is a BOFH excuse generator. You can just refresh the page, and it generates another Bastard Operator from Hell excuse. So this would be an excuse for why, your network was running slow or server is down. So this is a minor handler dump or a database corruption signal, aborted level problem because of an unfiltered handler reclock. I mean, something just crazy, right? Inherent code condition.
That's perfect for Twitter.
It really is, yeah. Resignaled streaming flag, bidirectional parameter error. That sounds believable.
I just asked ChatGPT for a definition of BOFH, and it immediately responded, BOFH stands for Bastard Operator from Hell. It is a term that originated in the world of information technology and refers to a fictional character who is often portrayed as an abusive and manipulative system administrator. The BOFH character was first introduced in a series of short stories written by Simon Travaglia in the 1990s, which were published on the Internet and in various IT magazines. The stories typically involve the BOFH using his technical expertise to exact revenge on coworkers who have irritated him in some way. The character has since become a cultural icon among IT professionals, and the term BOFH is sometimes used more broadly to refer to any IT worker who exhibits rude or unhelpful behavior towards users. I think that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, I think so. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although I haven't heard of people calling others a BOFH, but
I've heard of people using all those initials to come up with their own insults, but yeah.
Yes.
It's kind of an awkward thing to call somebody. Well, I think we're done for tonight. Have not seen any other calls come in, so I'm just happy to kick back and do some troubleshooting on our new system here so we don't go through that rough landing again in 2 weeks. Please write to us, oth@2600.com. That's our email address with whatever thoughts you might have. And
tell us what you're improving.
Yeah, and maybe suggestions. Or, you know, if you're in a different country, maybe you can offer us some advice on what systems work for you. Maybe we'll invest in those systems instead because our systems are broken. You know, maybe it's time to use an Amiga instead of an Apple or get rid of the old BlackBerry and get something different. I don't know, but we have to look at options.
I can't believe that hacking publication story, like Mac Addict. I remember when that was brand new, and Macworld was like the stalwart. And I realized, so Macworld predated it, but it didn't last as long. So Mac Addict ended up being in this heat of longest running, and it's just so weird. Time flies.
How do you keep track of them all?
Time flies. Yeah, they all changed ownership and changed names, and yeah, it's wild.
Well, 2600 survives for now, and hopefully we'll have more stories to tell.
And ever fresh.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, everybody, thank you for being a part of this. We will see you in 2 weeks. Good night.
Thanks.